Hey everyone, we are live for our Sunday weekly warm-up, which is an opportunity where the Teach Better team goes live every single Sunday at 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern, exclusive in our private Facebook group. For those of you who are watching this live, you're already in the group, but if you have a friend that is trying to sneak their way in, they can just go to the top of their URL and type in teachbettergroup.com. It'll redirect them to that free private group. We have over 7,000 educators that love to live and breathe in this space and talk shop. And what we really, really value about tonight's conversation is that this Sunday weekly warm-up was specifically designed to be exclusive to our private group so you all could engage with each other in the comments. Obviously, the people on screen have a lot to share, a lot of resources, ideas, action steps, but you all are experts in the field as well. And so your comments will be able to be seen by everyone in this community. So feel free to engage with one another. As many of you know, just in case you have a friend or family member not in this group, we do restream this live stream Monday nights at the exact same time to the full network, which also includes converting it to a podcast episode of Teach Better Talk Podcast. So everyone gets to engage, but to participate in the comments, you got to be in our private group. We'll be right back with an epic panel conversation where we are going to dive deep with these experts on new staff development and new staff retention. We all know that's a hot topic right now. So throw your hellos and your welcomes in the comments, and we'll be right back.
Hey, good evening, Teach Better family. It's Brad Hughes and Ray Hewer from the Teach Better team, exclusively in the Teach Better group, and we are getting set for a fantastic panel tonight focused on staff development and staff retention for our newest staff members. And Ray Hewer, it was only a week ago when we said our goodbyes at Teach Better 22. What an epic event, and what an awesome opportunity to connect in person with some incredible, incredible educators. It was like a heart-filling, soul-filling, bucket-filling experience. And Ray, how have you been since we last saw each other in Akron last weekend?
I had a great time at the Teach Better Conference. Shout out to so many of you who were able to join us at Teach Better 22. Actually, Allison and Josh were there with us. Marcus, we missed you, but I feel like you were there in spirit, you know? Like, you really were there. You just weren't physically there.
Yeah. I wish I could have been there, but, you know, leading a school, we're in post-football season, so a little crazy.
Totally crazy, but excited to have so many of you here. And Brad, I can't believe that we got this crew together for another epic panel.
This is an incredible crew. And as you said, we had the opportunity, Allison, Joshua, you and I, to connect in person. And Dr. Marcus has been a real friend of the Teach Better team and Teach Better community, taking part in our 12-hour lives. Taking part in a number of our live events and tons of value added. I want to dig in with Dr. Marcus about the incredible videos that he and a colleague are putting together, sharing the fun and sharing the great things that are happening there. But we have an incredible panel lineup tonight, and I just wonder if we can just take a few minutes and just get to know our panel. What do you think, Ray?
It's a great idea. Allison, do you mind if we go to you first? Who are you? I know so many people already know you, have your books, and stalk you on all social media, but let's pretend they don't for a second.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Where am I? I don't really know right now. I am in California. I am from Michigan, but this past summer I moved to Georgia. I finished up my 19th year as a principal in Michigan, and then my family moved to Georgia. And in that process, I am working full time for myself and in creative leadership solutions and supporting schools and districts and leaders across the country, which brought me to California this week. And then also, I am passionate about helping others discover the best in themselves. And that's through my work and my Serendipity EDU work. And then I did bring Leading the Whole Teacher, my newest book, to California with me. So just being able to support and uplift educators, spending 19 years as a school leader really allowed me the opportunity to learned so much about what it means to support teachers and to help them stay fulfilled and whole, feel whole in school. So this is a topic that's close to my heart. We have so many new staff members in the schools I visit. And I am a coach in so many ways. So I really, really connect with this topic and I'm so excited to be here alongside all of you. And I just want to mention what a joy Teach Better 22 was. And Marcus, like next year, like no excuses, you need to be there. You need to be there. Just the connecting, the networking, the learning, the empowerment. It was amazing.
So good. Speaking of Marcus, do you mind going next and telling us a little about yourself in case people aren't connected?
Yeah, sure. Well, first off, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to be with the team. I've been following the work, so now I'm here and live. And I'm Dr. Marcus Beelan. I serve as principal of Huntley High School in Huntley, Illinois. I'm about an hour outside of the city of Chicago. I am going into my fifth year in my first principal job ever, leading a school of 3,000 young people and 326 adults that help make my building run every day. So huge hats off to them. I have fun doing what I do. I also serving as immediate past president of Illinois Principals Association, board member of NASSP, National Association of Secondary School Principals. So I'm a little busy on top of that. While I don't have a book, Allison, it's right here. It's coming. We are working on it as we speak. I also have a podcast called Unapologetic Leadership, which you can find in the podcast here on Teach Better Team. And it was a pandemic project that kind of like grew some legs and just started running. So, and then on the side of my job, the real job is being a father of three young kids, 4, 6, and 9, and a wife who's an educator and instructional coach here in our area as well. So it's the life I live and the work I do. It's fun.
And Dr. Marcus, just before we got on air, you were letting us know that you spent the entire day at a cheer competition. And I know our Teach Better family wants to know, how are your pyramid skills?
I know how to do a few back tucks, a few herkies, a few extensions. You know, I'm there. My ears, though, I had to put in my headphones because I just feel like all I'm hearing right now is a bunch of young ladies, thousands of them actually, just cheering constantly, nonstop. So I'm in recovery mode right now.
Joshua Stamper, are your mat skills strong? And can you do a triple tuck double layout?
I cannot, but I understand the feeling that he has in his ears because I have 6 children at home. So it's kind of feeling the same way. Yeah. But I'm impressed with Dr. Beelan's skills just in the way that he was able to throw out the verbiage like that. I mean,
Trust me. I also got a coach in the house. So
my respect level is this high. But now, you know, once he threw out those cheerleading techniques and whatnot, I mean, it's off the chart. So, no, I'm super proud of having Marcus with us on the Teach Better Podcast Network. Just to have him part of that family is just really, really fun. And I respect him so much. So it's fun to be on a panel with him too.
Yeah. You know, Josh, I was going to say, as many of our community members know you, obviously as a member of the Teach Better team, we wanted to bring you in to this conversation because of your background. So even though I know everyone knows who you are and you're live all the time, would you mind sharing a little bit about your background in education, kind of what you're currently doing, add a little bit of context?
Of course. So I have the last 9 years, similar to Allison, I've been in the administrative role. So I've been an assistant principal at a middle school for the last 9 years. And yeah, I absolutely loved it. And this is a wonderful topic. I think this is very timely. I know in our admin mastermind, which I get to lead every Tuesday morning, with a bunch of fabulous administrators. I mean, this was a big topic across the country. You know, this is something that people are battling with. So now I'm the training development specialist with the Teach Better team, and I get to help support in so many ways. And one of those ways, obviously, is with Mastermind, but then also with school districts. And, you know, get to go live, I get the podcast network, I get to do things with the media team. So, I mean, I have my hands in a lot of things with the Teach Better team, but I absolutely love it. I love my expanded role. And I just feel so fortunate not to only be on the team, but then to see everyone live at Teach Better 22, which was absolutely epic. It was such a phenomenal time with everyone. And it's fun to now be with you all.
Ray, this is truly a team, a panel discussion that everyone can cheer for and get behind. And we have representation from all grade levels, I'd say from K to 12. We've got school leaders, we've got consultants, we've got trainers, we've got broadcasters, writers. And Ray, when you think about our upcoming topic tonight and you reflect on your career in education and your continued contributions to Teach Better, what's coming to mind in terms of the needs and the fears right now for new staff and keeping people engaged with education?
Yeah, I'm so excited to get into this discussion, Brad. And I think it's a phenomenal question. More than anything, I just love highlighting the fact that these panels were a idea that you brought to the team. And I couldn't be more excited that we brought a panel together to discuss this topic, because it's coming up everywhere that Teach Better is existing these days, whether we're in schools, whether we're live, whether we're doing strategic coaching or anything in between. We have educators, administrators, teachers, members of our academia levels are asking us about this topic. So Brad, I think I'm just very appreciative of you. Like I always say, I'm so appreciative you brought this idea to the team to do these panels. And I think we should dive into this concept, because I know people are eager to get some ideas, some action steps of how we can be better with new staff development and retention. Are you ready to get started?
I can't be more ready. Let's get going.
Here we go.
And we're back, and you're live. Exclusively in the teachbettergroup.com on Facebook with Joshua Stamper, Allison Apsey, Dr. Marcus Bielan, Ray Hewart, and I'm Brad Hughes from the Teach Better team. And we're diving into conversation tonight around a topic that is near and dear to all of us and near and dear to the very heart and soul and future of schools and education. And that is how to retain and attract new educators into the field and to keep them sustained, active, engaged, happy and joyful in their work. And Ray, I know the pandemic, as we continue to work our way through, absolutely revealed the stresses and the strains on educators of all kinds, especially educators new to the role, where a new education system was being built from the ground up, incredible challenges to take on, and maybe, you know, just not enough resources and not enough support to go around is leading to what some are calling the great resignation, not only in education, but in other workplaces, other walks of life. Ray, what's coming to mind for you in terms of how much education has changed or shifted and what that might mean for the new teacher or educator getting started?
Yeah, I'd love to hear our community's thoughts on what's leading to the need for this topic to be so prevalent. I think for me, it's just that I continue to hear educators share their exhaustion and continue to share their frustration with lack of support, which I really truly feel is not because we have leadership that don't care. I think that we need to continue to find our ways to be efficient, effective, to scale the work that's being done in schools. And that's not easy to teach a new member of our staff, a new member of our teaching community. So Marcus, I'd actually love to start with you. When we reached out and said, hey, will you speak on a panel about new staff development and retention, do you feel like you have a you know, one fix wonder, or is this a building block of a lot of things that you'd love to dive into?
If I had a one fix wonder, I wouldn't be writing a book. I would have the book. I'd be the richest man in education, just because there are so many avenues and so many directions in which people can go when it comes to looking at staff retention, when it comes to figuring out how do we keep people engaged in a post-pandemic society, especially because we have our young people who many of us, and I'm just going to keep it very transparent and real, there have been some young people that have just lost their minds, not really knowing what school is and what it's about. So they add on that extra layer of us trying to figure out how do we meet their needs, but also how do we fill the buckets and meet the needs of our staff who pour into our young people every day. Right? You can't give what you don't have. And so when our staff needs to be connected and when we need to figure out ways to fill the gaps and the voids in which we have, because I will tell you, there's a lot of people still hiring for this current school year right now. I know I am. I just interviewed a student teacher who hadn't even graduated yet, but will in December and already have a role for him, you know, so I know it exists. And if, like I said, if there was a silver bullet or the key answer, I think many of us would pay great dividends in order to make that happen.
So let's dive into that a bit. Allison and Josh, I'd love you to jump in as well. If we kind of paint the picture of you have a brand new teacher this year, it's October. Let's say that they started new in your community this last August, and maybe they've taught before. Maybe this is their first year out of college. They just graduated. You know the types of struggles that they're currently going through. Where do you even begin? Maybe that's the first step, because we're all about action steps here. So yes, there are a lot of different hurdles to solve, but what do you think is the first step to supporting that educator?
I mean, Josh, I'll jump in. I think walking into their classroom and asking them, like, what's the biggest challenge you're facing right now? What does support look like to you right now? So asking those questions, not how are you? Don't ask that question, but ask a more specific question that's going to elicit some feedback that could then turn into support and action steps. But one of the things that I see across the country is that many states require mentor programs and many school districts have mentor programs, but they're on paper and they're more of like a face value kind of program rather than really pouring into mentors and supporting mentors and understanding like, what does that look like? What does support look like? How can you help a new teacher who feels like there's so many problems and they're so huge, and then take those problems and whittle them down into manageable size so that we can move forward and take action? So I guess one action step is ask. And then another is really reevaluate the mentor program that you have and how we can make that what it needs to be in order to help new teachers be successful and help us retain new teachers.
Allison, I love your comparison of the two questions. What can I do to support you versus how are you? Josh, I'd love to hear your thoughts on the difference between those two questions or and other things that might be helpful like that. Because I think that that's, I don't think that people ask like, oh, how are you? Because they're trying to avoid what they're actually asking is how can I support you? It just doesn't come out that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think it's just like a country norm, right? Like everyone does it, especially in the Midwest. So that's just a general, like, how are you doing? I want to know, but it's too broad. So like a new teacher doesn't know what they don't know. And so they're just treading water. They feel like they're drowning. And so when you ask that question, it's just so broad that they don't even know where to begin and where to start, because there's just so many things that they have questions on. And for us, you know, at one of my campuses, we created a cadre of group of folks, and it wasn't just for new teachers, brand new teachers. It was for anyone new on our campus, because as we all know, every campus has its own life, its own structures and procedures. And even if you're in the same district and you just went to a neighboring school, most often they're doing everything different on that campus. And so, you know, each campus has their own way of doing things. And we want to make sure that from day one, yes, they got some information, but we didn't want to overload them with so much information that they already felt like they were drowning before they even received kids. And so what we tried to do was break it down. So it was something that they were going through each year. And then once that group went through the first year of that, then we started to think, okay, do we need to stop there? Or is this something that we need to continue so that this is just building a culture of things and of values that we need to enhance in our classrooms. And that way everyone that comes into our system is hearing the same thing over and over again. And then also that group is another support, right? I think Allison made a great point that mentorship is something that districts check off on a box. And that typically is what that is, right? I assign you a person, you don't know them. You may not even teach the same subject matter, but you are a mentor. Well, what does that really mean? So it was more about being intentional about making relationships, making them stronger, and something where it was a resource that they could go to throughout the school year.
Josh, in that system, did you have success tailoring the agenda or tailoring the support that mentors were providing to actually what the new teachers and new educators were craving? rather than maybe shifting focus to state standards or simply how to teach or the mechanics of teaching. How did you center the needs of new educators in that process?
Yeah, I think the new educators specifically loved it because they just wanted information and they wanted a safe space to be able to ask questions, because unfortunately they feel like they don't know what's going on and they don't want to look weak or incompetent. And so typically they don't ask questions in a larger group. And so this gave them a safe space to be able to ask any question that they had available. But then also as an administrative staff, then we were able to then hit the agenda of what we thought was important on our campus, because we were different. We wanted to make a difference in classrooms. We wanted to be engaging. We wanted them to have flexible seating. We wanted to do all these initiatives that we felt were extremely valuable that may not be something that they may hear from the district, but we got to tailor it to the way that we wanted to see our classrooms run. And classroom management, I think Dr. Bielan talked about that right now. Like, a lot of times students, you know, when they're going through the campus and those classes, they're not getting a whole lot of information about how to manage a classroom. They're learning how to implement the curriculum. So when they get to the classroom, that's a whole new world. And a lot of times you can't learn that until you get that experience. And so we did try to work with classroom management, social emotional learning, trauma-informed care, restorative practices. All of those things were also implemented in these cadres.
Joshua, when you talk about trauma-informed care, that reminds me that adults and educators themselves have experienced a great deal of trauma and distress through the pandemic. And many of our educators, whether they're new or whether they're experienced, are continue to be immersed in high community stress. And Allison, when I think about your book and supporting and leading the whole teacher, it's about more than simply how to teach and what to teach. It's about how to manage the emotions around the job. And I wonder if you have any thoughts about what it might take to reassure and support new educators and to keep them in the field by focusing attention on what their emotional needs might be.
Yeah. Yeah. Great question. And I appreciate hearing from all the panelists. So when I travel and speak to different groups of educators, I often ask them the question, what might make a teacher feel unsafe at school? And they respond in a word cloud form. So the word that's used over and over again is the biggest in the center. And I asked this before COVID, I asked it during COVID, post COVID, all levels, high school to elementary. And the words that come out the biggest in the center are most often judgment, lack of support, gossip, and the teacher evaluation process. Like, not school violence, you know, behavior, like those things come up, but the things that are always the largest in the center are those interpersonal things, actually between adults, and most often between adults who work in the building. And I mean, that's like Josh was talking about, new teachers don't want to ask questions because they don't want to be judged. They're worried about being judged. So developing an environment that is full of trust, where taking risks and failure is part of the norm and expected, and that we're all transparent with our vulnerabilities, because we all have them. Even your school leaders have them, and we have things that are strengths and things that we're working on improving, and making that more of the norm, I think, can be a support in helping school be an emotionally safe place for our educators, especially our new teachers.
I'd love to hear from anybody on our panel kind of taking this concept a little further. Allison, I couldn't agree more and love this concept of really working on staff-to-staff relationships as a way to continue to enhance and better our new staff. How do we actually take that into an action step? I'm not sure who wants to jump in here on our panel, but what are some ideas, multiple ideas, I would hope, not just from one person, but from all, of ways we can actually like go do that, maybe as early as like Wednesday morning, if we have a staff meeting this week, like mm-hmm. can we do something to get us headed in that direction?
Yeah, so one of the things we've done this year was actually some teachers at the end of last year who came to me, and, you know, everybody had been to war and was beaten. We were all at the end of the school year and we were like, all right, we can't have another year like this. And so There was some staff that came to me and wanted to start kind of a staff culture committee. We met a couple times over the summer just to talk about what are some of the things that work, how are these committees separate from some things that already exist? How do we not recreate that typical committee that only a few people who are very involved tend to gravitate towards? It's always the group of people who, you know, the cliques and so forth that happen within schools. But how can we reach everyone? One of the things is just being intentional and specific about what we do and when we do it. We created some staff communities amongst. We rolled out actually a new platform, a learning management system that we are creating a page specifically for all of our staff to live. It's kind of like the Facebook for inside the building where people can post like, hey, need some suggestions on this, looking to do this or that. Who has a great idea? Tried this in my classroom. Because what I've also found out is that a lot of my staff who are doing some awesome things in the classroom are the ones that are like, oh, please don't post that on Twitter. Please don't put that out on Instagram. Like, they're shy because they don't want to share the great things, because they too are not the ones that want to be out in the forefront. Like, they're always doing the most. They don't want to be the topic of gossip of like, they're always doing the great things. Their classroom is always highlighted. So they tend to do things and do things that are great for kids, but not be able to share them or things that are working within their classroom. So if we can create this space where they're not on the public stage, but they can still share within our school community, it's been great. Additionally, taking that a little bit further is, what are we doing intentionally outside of school? Not everything that we do has to fall within the confines of a staff lounge or a classroom or a particular hallway or department meeting, but what are things that we can do outside? And so we've done gatherings outside at different places. Restaurants or taking trips or, you know, Top Golf or something where people can bring family members too, right? We're all about family. And so allowing our staff to be able to just be and be each other outside of the workspace.
Marcus, when you work at a campus as large as yours and you serve as many students and faculty as you do, how do you, as school leader, either on your own or as a team, make sure that our newest educators and staff members aren't lost in the shuffle?
Yeah, so we utilize our mentoring program that we have within the building. Every staff member who comes in that's brand new to our building, not just new to education, come in and actually get linked up with someone either in their department or that will mostly impact the work that they do. Our instructional coaches have new staff meetings that happen once a month where they connect with them and kind of let them know of some things that are taking place. But it's kind of like Allison said, when, you know, intentionally walking in and having conversation to say, hey, what can I help you with? How are things going, in a way of like, look, don't tell me, hey, things are going great. No, my staff knows. I hate that, because I know you're going to tell me what I want to hear. I need you to tell me what I need to hear. So being intentional, engaging in those conversations. And I think that's the most important piece of this, right, is having face-to-face one-on-one conversations. I will never ask a staff member in an email like, hey, just stop by your classroom or walk by, just want to check in and see how you're doing. While that does go to some lengths of being intentional about checking in, having that that face-to-face conversation, whether it be in the hallway, whether it be in passing, or just say, hey, I want to stop by and see your classroom, and at that point engaging or leaving a sticky note like, hey, just touch base, let me know how I can support you, I think goes a long way.
Allison or Josh, if you are aware of a staff member who is struggling, you know how vulnerable we are when we struggle, no matter how early or late we are to the profession or any walk of life. How can we as colleagues or school leaders create conditions where it's emotionally safe to reveal, hey, I'm struggling? Because no one wants to reveal that they are struggling. Everyone wants to put a strong face forward. They want to make sure that their school leaders know they're doing the very best they can. What does it take to create an emotionally safe community where even those that are struggling can seek the help that they need?
Yeah, I think it's being intentional, like everyone is talking about, but doing it in a way that is not in front of other folks. So, you know, the last couple of years, what I've done is created a spreadsheet of my staff, and it was specifically for me to walk into their classroom when it was just me and them, to ask them intentional questions about what's going on in their life. And it was not only what was going on the campus, but what beyond the campus, because as we know, so much is going on in the world. And, you know, what I was uncovering was that, you know, we talk about trauma-informed strategies for our students. We don't a lot of times use that on our staff. And I was uncovering a lot of things that was going on at home that they were put on a brave face and the smile that they needed to, and they did a wonderful job with our students, but they were hurting. And the only reason I started to uncover that was because I was intentional with my time going in and not asking just the how are you doing question, but actually being pointed about, you know, what's going on in your life beyond just the classroom. And thankfully, you know, it took some time, of course, building the relationship and making sure that I was going there often, because I'll be honest, the first time I went in there and asked, you know, the wall was up and they didn't want to share because I'm the boss or whatever the viewpoint of who I was as an administrator. And so it took some time to make sure that they understood it. No, I'm truly here to understand what's going on in your world because I truly value you as a human being. And I want to know what's going on. And so after, you know, continuing to repeat that, they started to understand that I was truly there to help them and hopefully provide some resources. And thankfully, you know, some people trusted that relationship and shared out. And I was able to then, of course, help in any way. And sometimes it was just a listening ear. And sometimes it was actually resources that the school could provide. Or maybe it was just mental health time, like go home, take care of your family, take care of yourself. That is something that's too often we don't do. And so, I found great dividends from that strategy. And it was one of those things that I really enjoyed.
So that was kind of the dumb question that I was going to ask, but you started getting there, Josh. So I appreciate you helping me get there. It's interesting that we've spent a great chunk of time thus far opening up the conversation to actually occur. I think another layer to this is when a staff member comes to you and says, I'm struggling, I need help, I think I'm thinking about like leaving the profession, I'm so unhappy, I'm drowning. I think a lot of the stress that comes with this topic is then the leadership or the colleague, whoever's confided in, not even knowing what to do to help. Yes, it's wonderful to listen. And if they just need a listening ear, then amen that we have such wonderful people in this field that can just be supporters by listening and having empathy. But what are those other things? And maybe we can just brainstorm an oodles of them that way, just in case people have a list. But what are those things that we can actually do? Because the reality is that most of these issues are massive traumatic issues that aren't just going to be solved with a listening ear or one conversation. Allison, I see you unmuted. So maybe we'll start with you.
Thank you. That's a great question, but I just want to acknowledge, Marcus, like I love what you talked about with shared leadership and developing that committee and that like Facebook, that staff Facebook page to share ideas. Those are great ideas. And then Josh, I really appreciate how you talked about that record keeping and intentionality as you were going around and touching base with each of the staff members, because that's where trust is built when they know that you're going to be providing that same support to everyone. And then Ray, to your good point of like, what do we do when staff members are struggling? Because they are. And I saw often, and I continue to see that what sometimes feels like support actually makes the problem bigger. So like if I'm saying to my mentee comes up to me and says, oh my gosh, like I am struggling with this student, this student, this student, this student, this student, this student, this student. And the mentor says, you have about the worst class I've ever seen. Like they think that is support that feels like empathizing or validating the feelings, but you can't solve the worst class that you've ever seen, but you can solve bits of problems. So helping them think about like, okay, tell me about a lesson that went really well, a time when it was better, or let's lay out everything that you're struggling with, like just all your anxieties. Let's lay them out. Let's categorize them of like what's within your control or influence and what's not. And let's get rid of those things that are not within your control or influence. Those aren't for you to worry about. Let's focus in on what you can control. So focusing in on what's within control, making problems as small as possible. And then just the other is like asking those questions to dig down to the root of what is actually going on. Because what's often at the surface is not if we try to solve that surface problem, we're not going to solve the actual problem. So there's often layers to what's going on. So if we can get down to the root and solve the actual problem, we can make some progress. So those are my thoughts.
I think there's real power to Allison and panel of taking time to ask a second and a third question and to check your understanding of any situation to make sure that you're providing information and care and support that is really needed. So, you know, some questions like, and some restating or reframing of what you're hearing back to the person that you're supporting or mentoring to make sure that you're really on the same track. Is that really what you mean? Or what I hear you saying is, or I'm wondering about. So, you know, as a mentor or a facilitator, you can hopefully help to reveal that educator, that colleague, has the capacity and has the capability to reach his or her own conclusions or solutions, but just with the companion on the side.
I agree. Can I show this comment real quick?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's so true.
Hey, Josh, will you read it out loud just in case somebody's listening on Teach Better Talk podcast after this streams?
I would love to. It says, not the symptom by treating symptoms, treating the underlying issue and seeing how many symptoms decrease. And I think that's so true. I think Allison touched on it so many times. And this goes with student behavior sometimes too, right? I mean, a student is being disrupted in a class and we just try and solve that small little symptom when underlying it might be something greater, like that student didn't get any sleep last night, or they're hungry and they don't have any food in the house. And, you know, because of these bigger issues, you know, we don't see them because we haven't really investigated and we haven't really got to know what's going on in that student's world. We're just trying to hit the symptom. And that's so often true with teachers too, you know, and sometimes we might see a behavior that we go, oh, that's not professional. And we're trying to, you know, hone in on just that little behavior when maybe underlying they're, you know, going through a really messy divorce at home, or, you know, there's something much bigger going on behind the scenes. And so I just love that comment.
I will also say, you know, for both the positive and even the challenging times, I always tell our students, but everyone hears me say this in our school community, is that you never know who's watching your journey. And some of the challenges and some of the struggles that you are going through in the moment could be potentially somebody else going through the same thing, right? And whether that person who is watching your journey, you have that level of influence. There was another comment in here called spheres of influence. Your level of influence and what you are able to do in the space in which you are may have a significant and profound impact on somebody else and their journey. So allowing your story to be able to play out and not always make it seem like it needs to be perfect. There's some teachers who have been in my building for over 30 years in the same building. And at the pandemic, they were at their lowest, right? They were like, I feel like a first year teacher. I'm like, you've been in the game for 30 years. What do you mean you feel like a first year teacher? And now that feeling was for everyone. So we had to get to a common level of understanding that when I ask you to go play in the sandbox, understand that everybody in that sandbox is at the same level. Understand that everybody's building a different castle, but you always are looking over to see what else you can do in your space that you can gather and be like, ooh, I like that. Ooh, I'm going to take that. Ooh, I'm going to steal that. Because at the end of the day, it's making you better at the work that you do for kids.
I love that, Marcus. And that, like, I want to build on that a little bit because I would be remiss if I didn't mention that we also need to make sure that our new teachers, our veteran teachers, they know that we see their value in their strengths. Because like Marcus was talking about, like playing in the sandbox and looking at other ideas, like you, if you feel strong and positive, you're like, oh yeah, I can grab that. I can do that. You want to grow. But I saw a TikTok video from a teacher who was saying like, I'm never going to be good enough at this. I'm never going to be good enough at this. I'm never going to be good enough at this. In this job, it can feel like that because we're always trying to better ourselves in order to better serve our students. And that's why it's so important that every single person in our school, every single staff member needs to know their value and their strengths. And they're not going to be ready to grow and take the next step until they do. So I think that's a really important part of mentoring and obviously leadership too.
And you know, Allison, I was going to say, Allison, We talk about infusing our individuals and our cultures with hope at a time when it's never been needed more. And Brené Brown sees hope not as something that's simply aspirational, but is something that is a process, you know, namely, you know, working alongside others to help identify goals and then to help to reveal a pathway that may be subject to some course correction, but a pathway to the goal. And finally, it's reinforcing that sense of efficacy. And that's where I see the role of mentors and colleagues and school leaders and just coming alongside new educators and others that are newer to the role to, you know, work through the goal setting and the pathways, but most importantly, reminding them that they can do it and they will do it with support, maybe not on their own, but it's continuing to pour into their sense of hopefully growing sense of efficacy and learning through setbacks and mistakes that we're going to stay on the path. But, you know, I wonder if any other panelists have some quick tips about how to bolster that efficacy for someone who might be feeling kind of low and kind of not on top of their game.
Well, I want to touch on what Allison was talking about, because, you know, she was talking about the word bank, right? And the assessments of teachers was part of that word of people feeling insecure. And I think it's because often that system is more of a got you and a graded system instead of it being, I'm here to empower you as a teacher. I'm here to model and build you up to make you the greatest version of yourself. And, you know, so many times I feel like the system and administrators get in the way of growth instead of uplifting, right? And that hope comes with that too, because if you feel like you're a failure, of course, your hope is going to go down. But if you're in there, you're supporting, you're giving them praise and uplifting the things that they're doing well, of course, that's going to only fill their cup and make them feel like a better teacher. And I know that was something that I was trying to do in the evaluation process was, I am not here against you. I am here with you side by side as a coach, as a mentor, someone that can be a resource to build you up. And I think that needs to be across the board for any leader that's listening right now. That's what folks want. They don't want to feel like they're being caught doing something wrong and being reprimanded. That's a terrible feeling in any profession. So I would just like that system as a whole to be kind of changed and looked at in a different lens. So that way we can make sure that no matter if they're a first year teacher or a 30-year veteran, that they know that they can come to the table and they have a voice and it matters. And it's going to enhance the progress of a campus.
I hate to cut this conversation short because I know there's so many things we could continue to dive into, but we are running out of time here. So before we end our panel so far, we have a quick transition here, and our last segment is going to challenge our panelists to identify one key takeaway from this conversation they want to make sure is highlighted, just an extra amount, maybe challenge you to take something on this week that you may not have already had on your list so we can all continue to be better in this area. And then in addition to identifying their favorite key challenge or takeaway from today's conversation, we also want to make sure our panelists share their contact information so you listening can continue this conversation with them by following them or direct messaging them and continuing this dialogue. So we'll be right back just to make sure we wrap this all up and make sure that you all continue to be connected educators.
You're back, and we're back to wrap up another incredible panel, Sunday Weekly Warm-Up here, teachbettergroup.com. Brad Hughes and Ray Hewitt from the Teach Better team, and we've been chatting new staff development and retention with the incredible Allison Apsey, Dr. Marcus Bielan, and Joshua Stamper. Tell us some of your takeaways. We start with Josh about, you know, what are you leaving this conversation with, and what are you inspired to do differently or better tomorrow, and what do you think is coming up for you?
Oh my goodness. I just want to highlight the appreciation piece, right? I mean, obviously people come to our campus every single day to give their very best. And I just want everyone to think about who can they give a little bit of gratitude to make sure that they feel appreciated for everything that they do on their campus. Obviously I need to do that with the Teach Better team because you all are fantastic. And I love all the support that you provide, not only to the team, but to the education community as a whole. But I think that's just something that, you know, I always felt like I could be better at, and wanted to continue that conversation tonight and leave that with everyone to think about what systems do you have in place to make sure that you have, you know, a whole campus full of folks that know that you appreciate them.
Hey, Josh, before we move to Marcus to get his biggest takeaway, would you mind also sharing your best way to contact you?
Of course. Yeah, well, on social media, you can see you're there, Joshua_Stamper on Twitter and Instagram, or if you want to reach out via email, joshua@teachbetter.com.
Marcus, would you mind highlighting your biggest takeaway? And also, don't forget ways to connect.
Yeah, for sure. So we've mentioned it's a word that has come up multiple times in here, and that's being intentional. You know, one of the things about being intentional is not just highlighting it. We know that failure is a part of the process, but it's also highlighting the positives, something that we have been very intentional with within our school community. We've done a segment that we post every week called What's Good in the Last 24. So really focusing on the last 24 hours, like there's something positive that has happened, and what is it? And for some kids, it's, you know, passing a test for a teacher. They've had a great lesson that they planned or that they teamed up with somebody with. And so we created a video to be able to post out there. But again, it's just being intentional about the work that we do and the work that we do for kids, because all of what we are talking about here directly impacts our young people. And so if we're not getting better ourselves, if we're not living and walking the walk and talking the talk, failing along the way, but also highlighting our successes, we can't be our best selves for our young people. So with that being said, I'm going to transition over to some way to contact. As you can see on the screen, or for those who are listening on Twitter, it's Marcus J. Beelen. On Instagram, it's actually Dr. Marcus Beelen. You can connect with me there at drmarcusbeelen.com. We'll have all of my contact information or ways that we can connect. So I look forward to connecting with those who are listening.
Allison, we'd love to hear your takeaway and contact information as well.
I loved what I heard about shared leadership, in particular in supporting new staff and staff retention, because I have to tell you, like, I mean, Marcus can tell us, principals are exhausted also, and they are not poured into in the way that they deserve from you know, the district level, or they're middle managers, and it is hard. It's hard work. And so then to turn around and pour into your people when your cup is empty as a principal, like, you don't have that capacity. So sharing the wealth and creating a campus culture, like Marcus is talking about doing and Joshua talked about doing it at his school, where everybody is looking for strengths in each other and supporting each other, there's that intentionality about how we're making that happen, is crucial. So I'm just excited to have been a part of this conversation. I hope that everybody, I feel uplifted. I was a little tired from travel today, and I feel energized and ready to roll. But you can reach me at Allison Apsey on all the social medias. I even have a very cringy TikTok, according to my 15-year-old and 20-year-old sons. And I don't dance on it yet. And you can reach me at AllisonApsey.com or AllisonApsey@gmail.com if you'd like to email me.
Brad, you have facilitated such a wonderful discussion. I love that you brought these panels to our Teach Better community. I would love to hear, Brad, if I put you on the spot, like, your major takeaway from this. I loved this discussion. What do you think is your major takeaway?
Thanks, Ray. And my takeaway is that it's a community effort. It's about culture. It's about mutual support. And I often think of the advice that educators are given, where they're reminded that kids don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And I think that goes for every member of a learning community. It's putting caring first and keeping your radar scanning your environment, your hallways, your classrooms, your campus for opportunities to connect and to dig a little deeper about what might be going on below the surface to make sure that you've got a network of support. And rallying support for new educators and keeping that investment in our schools and our kids has never been more important, Ray. And I'm wondering what you're taking away from the conversation tonight.
No, similar to so many things that you guys have already mentioned, I've loved the parallel between the things that we know are great for students, that we need to continue to bring those into our staff. So if you have a staff member that is struggling, it's just like our students that are struggling. We are really good problem solvers when it comes to our little humans that we teach. So how can we all continue to be reflective to know that those same strategies or similar approaches can get us just a little bit closer and reaching our staff a little bit better. So I want to thank everybody for being a part of this. Again, Brad Hughes, thank you especially for bringing panels to our community with this great idea that we love to do once a month with our Sunday weekly warm-up. Thank you for joining us, everyone here in the comments. And if you're catching this after the fact on Monday when it's streamed to our full community, maybe as a Teach Better Talk podcast episode, we want to encourage you to not only join the group, the free Facebook group, so you can be a part of the discussion live with us every Sunday, but also continue to join us week to week as we have great conversations with incredible educators every single week on Sunday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern. We want to send you all a wonderful energy and positivity for the week ahead. And of course, if you need anything, not only the people on the screen, but our full network is here to support you. So thank you to everybody for your time. And we hope you have a fabulous week. Bye, friends. See you later.